I'm going to call the House Tax Committee to order. Is the tape on? You know, I have a habit that I listen to, and I've had this since I was a freshman, that I listen to other people's committee meetings on a very regular basis. And I've always done that, and it's a secret weapon for legislators to do it, because you can always figure out what the Senate's doing by actually listening to them on the tape. So I listened to Ms. Starr present walk through for the Senate Tax Committee a history on the estate tax, talk about the gift tax, and talk about what happened in last year's bill, and it was an excellent presentation. So I asked her to join us. She's now in a different role, but formerly was sort of the expert in the Department of Revenue on estate and gift, and also, as members will recall, we asked the department to do this study last year, I think? Yes, last year. So 2 years ago. Okay, so this was due to hear this anyhow, and this is something I think that all the authors of all these bills and the whole committee should be very interested in this kind of subject matter. So that's how we're going to start today. I will tell you, in listening to other people on the tape, it's always it's a good reminder that everything we're doing, maybe the Senate is listening to us. So when we sent those vehicles to the register yesterday, if they were tuning in, they know what we're up to. But in all seriousness, I'm glad you're here, Ms. Starr. And if you can just tell us who you are for the tape. I think for some committee members, too, to know who you used to be and who you are now and what capacity you're in here today, because there might be a little confusion. And we don't have a lot of time because we want to be done with all the bills and adjourned on time. But I think this is a really critical piece for members to understand a few concepts that all these bills are dealing with. Some are straight repeals of the gift tax, but other people are trying to unify the gift tax. Other people are trying to correct things in the estate tax. And in particular, I hope you could get the committee to understand what the bubble or the balloon is that people talk about, if members don't know, and what it means to unify the gift tax and what is a reform state as it relates to the estate tax. And I think that'll just help all the testifiers, too, who care about different pieces. So welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jenny Starr. I've been an attorney with the Department of Revenue for about 7 years, and during that time, I worked in the areas of corporate franchise tax, estate, and gift tax. My role did change slightly this year. As some of you know, I'm serving as the senior manager for tax policy during this legislative session. But I'm here today in my capacity as a technical expert in the areas of estate and gift tax. And I appreciate your willingness to listen to this presentation. So as was mentioned earlier, a study was requested by 2011 session laws to look at Minnesota's estate tax. The study is now available online, and it evaluates the estate tax, considers effects of federal law changes, discusses options to revise, reform, replace, or repeal, and presents some available evidence or reports on the issue of migration. I'm not going to get into too many of these topics today. I'm going to focus on the following three: the rate structure, the exclusion amount, and the lack of unification between Minnesota's current estate and gift tax laws. But just for context, I think it's important to point out that only a small proportion of decedents, less than 3%, pay the Minnesota estate tax. And half of that tax is paid by those with gross estates before deductions of over $5 million. Said in another way, according to the 2013 Tax Incidence Study, it estimated that Minnesota households with incomes in the top 10% pay about 96% of Minnesota's estate tax. This is discussed in greater detail in the study, the overall conclusion being that the estate tax is Minnesota's most progressive tax. Yeah. Moving on to the rate structure. So what I think is important to know is between 1979 and 1985, Minnesota had its own marginal rate structure enacted in its laws, with rates ranging from 7 to 12%. During this time, there was a federal credit against the federal estate tax for estate taxes paid to an estate. Minnesota's tax between 1979 and 1985 sometimes exceeded the federal credit for state taxes paid, but it was never less than that credit. Beginning in 1985, Minnesota's estate tax was set to equal the federal credit, and this continued through 2001. So in other words, from 1985 to 2001, the federal estate tax provided a 100% tax credit for any Minnesota estate tax paid. Any tax paid to Minnesota reduced the federal estate tax dollar for dollar, and this was referred to as the pickup tax. Minnesota picked up a share of what would otherwise have been paid to the federal government. To achieve this result, Minnesota did not have its own rate table. Instead, it asked taxpayers to look at pre-2001 federal law, calculate two different amounts, and pay the lesser of the two. Major changes were made to the federal estate tax in 2001, including a phase-out and eventual repeal of that credit for taxes paid to a state that I believe the eventual repeal occurred in 2005. Minnesota, however, even after the federal credit phased out, kept its tax calculated at the maximum federal credit allowed under pre-2001 federal law. So what that means is that today, in 2014, estates continue to rely on that pre-2001 federal law to calculate their tax. And what this slide is trying to show is the complexity of the tax calculation. You calculate tax under Table A, and then you calculate tax under Table B, and then you pay the lesser of the two. You can't go into Minnesota laws and find a marginal rate table. This complexity is also shown on another handout that should be in your packets. It's the Minnesota tax calculator. It's available online from the Department of Revenue. And this is what taxpayers' estates fill out to determine the tax. They're trying to determine line 18 and line 24 of this complicated schedule to figure out what the lesser of the two amounts is. When you look at this screen, it might be easier to see it in the printed handouts. What you also can start to see is the different marginal rate structures that apply to the two different calculations. So for calculation A, the rates range from 18% to 55%, and in calculation B, the rates range from 0.8% to 16%. On this slide, what we're trying to show is what the rates look like under calculation A. So here, the rate is 0% up to $1 million, and then it's 41% starting at $1 million, and it gets to 55% over $17 million. So this is what calculation A's rates look like in graph form. This is what calculation B's rates look like. And here we see those marginal tax rates ranging from 0.8% to 0.16%. In the next slide, you see the interaction between those two rate tables. So down in the lower left-hand corner, that little triangle, this is what causes what people refer to as the 41% marginal rate bubble. So if your taxable estate on the first $94,000 above Minnesota's $1 million exclusion amount pays a marginal rate of 41%. That's way down there just above the $1 million mark. And then you move over to calculation B. It becomes the lesser of the two amounts, and your rates then range from 5.6% to 16%. Now keep in mind that I'm talking about the marginal tax rate, the tax on the last dollar of the estate subject to tax. The tax per dollar of the average tax rate, right? So the average tax rate, not the marginal tax rate, it does rise progressively, which is shown in this graph. The blue line is the average tax rate, the tax per dollar of the state. The red line is the marginal rate, the tax on the last dollar. And there you can see that 41% bubble. Now the study points out that a marginal rate structure that includes this kind of a bubble is unique to state-level estate taxes. It's the result of these historical changes with the federal credit for state taxes paid, and probably would not have been chosen but for the years 1985 through 2001, when Minnesota, like almost all other states, picked up that maximum amount of the federal credit available. Today, 14 states in the District of Columbia continue to have an estate tax, and of those, 10 continue to experience this bubble rate like Minnesota. five, which the study refers to as reform states, have gone ahead and imposed their own rate structures. So in those five states, you can look into their laws and you can see marginal rate tables. Moving on to the exclusion amount, like our rate structure, Minnesota laws do not identify a $1 million exclusion amount. Rather, the exclusion is a result of reference to pre-2001 federal law. Enacted in 1998, Minnesota adopted federal law that raised the exclusion amount in steps from $600,000 in 1997 to $1 million in 2006 and later years. Minnesota did not, however, adopt federal law changes in 2001 that further increased the federal exemption levels to $5 million adjusted for inflation. In this slide, you can see the history of the Minnesota exclusion amount compared to the federal exclusion amount. One additional item that's probably worth noting in this area is that Minnesota does now have a deduction for qualified farm and small business property. This allows qualified estates to deduct up to $4 million of qualified assets from the taxable estate. So what's not shown here is that while the exclusion amount is $1 million, because of this deduction, for some who qualify, we've effectively raised the exclusion amount to the $5 million. You should keep in mind, however, that a higher exemption amount by itself does not eliminate the bubble or the 41% marginal rate. Rather, if you leave in law this calculation where you calculate two amounts and you pay the lesser of the two, and you simply raise the exclusion amount by itself, what happens is that 41% bubble rate increases. The interaction between those two lines on that graph change but continue to exist. So, for example, if the exclusion amount was raised to $3.5 million without imposing marginal rate brackets, the bubble rate would move from 41% to 55%, and the width of the range would also grow. So instead of $94,000 above the $1 million exclusion amount, it would be a width of $512,000.
Ms. Starr, excuse me, I do want people to take a second and look at what that chart and what you just said, because this is a very big misunderstanding that I've heard repeatedly from folks, that if we could just raise the exclusion in the estate tax from 1 million to 5 in its index, so it's 5.34, the bubble and the balloon would go away. And you just testified that wouldn't happen, and in fact, if people look, it would get worse. So you need to also change Minnesota's rate structure to get rid of that problem. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. To remove the bubble, you must impose standalone marginal rates.
Okay. And I just want to ask on that, too, while we're on it, in listening to your testimony from 1985 to 1997, and then from 1997, you know, the decision was made to get to a million over a certain amount of years, and we've been at that million since then. And I also want people to hear much of what I've heard in both bodies, and a lot of people and legislators will say, you know, last year we changed that one, that we were at 5 million and we went to one. And I want members to hear this correctly. Governor Ventura was at 1 million. Governor Pawlenty was at 1 million all 8 years, and we're still at 1 million. So I just want to get it on the record that a lot of people believe that the estate tax was changed, and it was not. We have had multiple governors not conform, even in times of surplus, on this tax in all parties. So, you know, I just want to put that out there. And I will say is that Representative Davids and Senator Ortman worked with the Governor Dayton to bring in the qualified farm and small business, and that was achieved, I believe, in 2011. We did some cleanup language in 13, but that afforded, and a lot of people don't understand this either, that farmers who qualify and all small business owners are at the 5 million in current law. So I've had so many people say to me, you know, we've got to get to 5 million for the business owners, and we already are. Representative Davids, Senator Ortman, and Governor Dayton achieved that in 2011, and I just want to ask you if I'm characterizing this correctly, because I know you're in a nonpartisan role, but there's so many things that I've been hearing this year at the Capitol that aren't accurate, and people, you know, we do need to make changes, but people need to do their homework on these provisions. Is that an accurate representation of who qualifies? And one more thing I'd throw on there is, even the business community often tells me, well, the exemption for the business and the ag is only to $4 million, and that's not accurate either. It's actually to $5 million when you couple the exclusions. So if you could comment on that, just so we're all starting with the right information before we hear these bills. Ms. Starr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is correct that Minnesota has not enacted a law that raised the exclusion amount for over a decade. Now, the raise from 600,000 to a million happened within that 10-year period, but we have not enacted laws that change the exclusion amount in over a decade. And as for the qualified small business and farm property deduction, it is true that if you have qualifying assets and you can make use of the entire $4 million of deduction on those qualifying assets, then in effect, you could use up to a $5 million exclusion amount if you qualify.
Thank you. I just want to get that right going forward. The gift tax is a whole different deal, and that is new, but I've had many legislators who don't serve on the tax committee, and even some who do, who think the estate tax was retooled last year, and it really has, I guess, from the standpoint of people who benefited from the tax cut, the advantages that were given to more folks in that situation were provided, again, by the, you know, Representative David's worked on that with the governor. And so those changes that are pro, you know, the businesses that wanted them were achieved, but that was not last year. So just trying to get people straight on what kind of happened. So thank you. Yes, Representative Groff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think part of the confusion here is because that there were substantial changes to the gift taxes in Minnesota. And so certainly when those taxes kick in and how they're effective are very complicated. There were many different tax increases that passed last year. I believe a big portion of that, a big part of the confusion, are the supercharged tax increases in the area of gift taxes. And hopefully at some point we'll have a conversation about the effect of those taxes.
I think that's a fair comment, Representative Garofalo, because we did bring in a gift tax, the current majority did, and there are a few provisions that affected the estate tax, like the three-year look back. And, you know, they're relatively minor to the big picture. And people put these items together in their head and say, you know, what happened to the estate tax last year? And if anything, it got a little better. In that, the work that Representative Davids did, we saw Representative Poppy join Representative Davids with the Farmers Bureau and the Farmers Union to ask for some clarifying changes to make those provisions work a little better. So I think you're right on that. That's the right critique, because, you know, if you didn't want the tax increases on this wealthiest folks, it was the gift tax. But people are putting them together in their heads, and if we're going to be serious about changes, this committee has to sort through that. So I appreciate and agree with you. Ms. Starr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe I have two more slides.
Okay.
This last slide gives some information about other state experiences with the exclusion amount. So as I noted earlier, there are 14 states in the District of Columbia that have an estate tax. Eight of those have exclusion amounts of $1 million or less. Three have exclusion amounts between $2 and $4 million, and two have exclusion amounts at the $5 million level indexed for inflation. But because of the interaction between the bubble rate and the exclusion amounts, these statistics don't really tell the whole story. So like I mentioned earlier, there are five states that the study refers to as reform states. And of these five, with the exception of Hawaii, they have prioritized removing the bubble rate, in other words, paying the cost to remove the bubble rate, and other complications created by linking to a defunct federal law, rather than concentrating on moving the greatest number of taxpayers off the estate tax by increasing their exclusions amounts. So said in another way, three of the five have exclusion amounts at $2 million. One has an exclusion amount at $1 million, and only Hawaii raised the amount to the federal $5 million amount. And of note, you might want to know that in the terms of rate brackets, the rate brackets range in these five states from between 7.2% at the start to 20% at the top. Regarding the Minnesota gift tax, so the last item I wanted to touch on is the lack of unification between the Minnesota gift tax and the Minnesota estate tax. So last session, a gift tax was enacted, effective for gifts made after June 30th, 2013. The tax rate is a flat 10% of Minnesota taxable gifts. There is a lifetime credit of $100,000 that can be used to offset any gift tax that would otherwise be owed on the first, which means it's on the first $1 million of taxable gifts, essentially creating what people refer to as a $1 million exclusion amount. But notice that because the gift tax rate is a flat rate of 10%, the gift tax did not adopt the rate structure that is otherwise imposed for estate tax purposes. This means that the tax rate that applies to an estate might be higher or lower than the tax rate that could have applied to taxable gifts made during the donor's lifetime. Further, because of Minnesota's three-year look-back period in the estate tax, gifts made in the three-year period prior to a donor's death, those gifts made prior to a donor's death could be made at the 10% rate during lifetime, but then when pulled back into the estate, could incur a different tax rate in the estate tax. There is, of course, a credit paid for the gift tax paid during life. Finally, because the lifetime credit of $1,000 is essentially independent of the estate tax $1 million exclusion amount, some people will experience a $1 million exclusion amount during their life for the gifts they made and another $1 million exclusion amount in their estate tax, while others won't make sufficient gifts to use up that $1 million exclusion amount during their lifetime. In other words, there is no lifetime exclusion amount. The exclusion amounts run independently of one another. This is not how the federal system works. The federal system and the only other state with both an estate and gift tax have unified approaches, which means there's a marginal rate structure that applies both during life for the gifts that are made and for the estate tax. The same rates apply, and there's a unified exclusion amount, meaning as you make gifts during your lifetime, you can be using up or relying on that exclusion amount, and whatever is left can be used by your estate for estate tax purposes. It's important to understand if there is a desire to unify the estate and gift tax for Minnesota purposes, it does require imposing our own marginal rate structure. It would be very difficult, I'm not sure how you would do it, to unify them with the rate structure we currently have in the estate tax. That concludes my prepared comment.
And Ms. Starr, because we're going to ask Mr. Michael to comment on sort of all the bills next, and then we're actually going to hear the bills. But before you go, we'll see if there's questions for you. I just want to also use this opportunity to walk members through the gift tax a little bit. In a way, I listened to the Senate Tax Committee ask kind of fundamental questions that I thought, you know, I assume most people knew that, but a lot of people didn't, and it was bipartisan. And so just so people understand, we have a lot of bills here. We have some bills here to unify the gift tax, as we've just talked about, and indeed when we passed it last year, we knew while we were passing it we would need to come back and unify them. And so I'm carrying a bill on that. Representative Seltzer has a bill on that. And then a bunch of other bills in the room, Representative Albright's here and Representative Torkelson, straight up repeal the gift tax, I think Representative Earhart. So set aside the repeal of the gift. You know, if people, there are people in this room who want to achieve repealing the gift tax. But if we didn't, we have to unify it. I think people can understand that. But I do want people to understand current law as it relates to the gift tax now. So I heard senators asking people on the table, you know, so you can give $14,000 a year and that counts towards your $1 million exemption, and it doesn't. So I just want to walk through an example so members understand how the gift tax would apply. So my husband and I have four children. So we can give each of our four children, each of us, $14,000 per year, and it does not apply to our lifetime exemption. So we can give our children $112,000 every year, and it will never apply to our lifetime exemption. Indeed, we can give 100 people $14,000 a year, every year. There is no limit on recipients of who you give these gift taxes to. So you can gift it away up to $4,000 per recipient per year, and it won't count against your million. Also, what's also exempt is charitable giving. So there's some confusion there. People think, you know, when you're giving to the arts, that's counting. No. Also exempt is medical gifts. So let's say you want to pay for someone's operation because they're in a situation they can't pay for it. That's exempt. And also exempt is payments for education. So you want to pay for someone's tuition. So before, you know, we go forward, you know, I just want people to know what we're talking about. So you and your spouse have to hit $2 million of lifetime exemption, not counting this $14,000 you can give every kid every year, and you can do charitable, and you can do medical, and you can do tuition. So I just want to be clear that people understand who we're talking about when we talk about repealing the most progressive taxes we have. So I would just ask Ms. Starr to correct me if any part of that description was incorrect, just so we have a fundamental understanding on that. Or maybe I could ask Mr. Michael. It's not maybe fair to you, since you're here as a source, but maybe Mr. Michael, is that a accurate description of what the gift tax that was put into law last year, how it's applied?
Madam Chair, I think you've done a good job of explaining the concept of taxable gifts and what's subject to tax. And the key thing, obviously, is the $14,000 annual exclusion that, as you illustrated, that does not count against the $1 million exemption, and that's an annual per recipient exclusion.
Okay, so thank you. So that's all I have. Questions for Ms. Starr or Representative Runbeck, please, and then Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The problem I've heard most commonly referred to is the business owner trying to, gift his business to his children. I mean, I don't know if that's the most common example of how this all comes into play, but that's what, those are real-life circumstances. So I don't know how any of this applies to that, and does it help them?
Yeah, I think it sounds like to me, Mr. Michael may have an answer, and I think that was really Representative Davids and Senator Ortman and former Speaker Zellers, who's right here, solved a lot of that very issue in what they did in their tax bill a couple years ago. So, Mr. Michael, can you address that ability to give your business?
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, two observations about that. One is that the exemption for qualified small business property, which Ms. Starr discussed, does not apply. That's purely applies under the estate tax, so there is no comparable exemption under the gift tax. So if you want to essentially give, $4 million of qualified small business assets away, you have to wait until you die and have that pass on death to claim that exemption. The annual exclusion would apply, and one of the estate planning techniques that frequently is used, obviously it's very difficult to give business property in $28,000 chunks unless you create an entity and then are giving away ownership interests in that entity. And that's routinely done. And one of the things that occurs with business owners that hasn't been talked about yet but is an important concept to keep in mind in this context is that one of the estate planning strategies for owners of businesses is to, in fact, create these kinds of entities, and then under court decisions and appraisal practices, those business owners, because what they do is create minority interests, and obviously the valuation is done on a fair market value basis, and appraisers will say, well, if you're a minority owner in a closed, privately held business, that's not as valuable as a portion of the assets. And so, in effect, what happens is you get a discount. So you will see, and that's a very common planning technique for owners of businesses, is that they will transfer portions of their business during their lifetime to other family members. And because those ownership interests are minority interests, they're not in proportion to the value of the business. It's sort of what's called a family limited partnership discount. And that tends to reduce the burden of the federal, this is done federally because these are federal rules. And so you can actually maximize that annual exclusion because this discount applies on top of the exclusion.
Yeah, there's a lot there, but and we're going to go to Representative Earhart next, and we want to get to the bills. But I do want to ask Mr. Michael, hearing all that, and You know, I do think it's also good to remind, and I think that was happening as we listened to Mr. Michael, if Mr. Michael could further, you know, just a little bit more on, you know, there are trusts, and I passed out an article called a GRAT. There are many ways that people can completely avoid these taxes, and just a little more discussion on what folks might be doing to avoid paying these taxes, and they're legal. I mean, this isn't an attempt to say someone's doing something that's not legal. It's legal. And Mr. Michael, if you could just tell us a little bit more on that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I won't try to get into it. Essentially, it's probably the most efficient way for you to do that is in the bill summary, because the chair's bill has a provision that relates to grats and attempts to impose some additional gift tax on them. If you look on page 6 of the bill summary, there's a description of that. Essentially, grats are, if you recall the discussion that Representative David and Representative Schoen and I had earlier about charitable gifts that use this technique, it's essentially a sort of a variant on that. There are IRS rules that allow for valuation based on Treasury security interest rates. And so, sort of in very simplistic terms, what typically would be done with one of these arrangements is that a donor would create what's called a grantor retained annuity trust, hence the acronym GRAT, that under the IRS valuation rules would say that because the trust is going to pay an annuity to the person that created it, to the donor, that trust will have very little value to the recipient, to the beneficiary. And what the donor will typically put in these trusts are assets that have the potential to appreciate a lot. And so the strategy is you put your most volatile assets into these trusts, and you create separate trusts for each different type of asset. So if you've got 10 different stocks, you put each of those stocks in the separate GRAT. And then after it, typically they'll have a short duration, like 2 or 3 years or 1 year or something like that. If that stock goes up dramatically during that period of time, the donor gets the appreciation. The appreciation does not count as part of the gift. So you've given the appreciation to the recipient and avoid the gift tax by doing that. If the stock doesn't appreciate, then the trust provides that it gets returned back to the donor. So it's sort of a heads I win, tails I don't lose scenario. And very wealthy people, as you'll see in that article that was in the packet, can use this as a way to avoid substantial amounts of gift tax liability if they own volatile assets and they put them in these, GRAT arrangements. I think that's enough on that, unless people.
Okay. and so now I think, and we're going to go to Representative Earhart, and we want to get through the bills. I wanted some context as we move forward. You know, that it's often people need to take a few minutes to think through what are we talking about, who are the people who would be affected. Ms. Starr, if you weren't in the room, opened her report by talking about these being the most progressive taxes we have. They apply to 3% of decedents on the estate tax, and you know this is a very small group of people who are very wealthy members. So, you know, the gift tax is often just said, "Oh, it's a tax on gifts to your kids." And I walked through to all of you how my husband and I could do $112,000 a year for the rest of our lives and to our 4 children and all the things that are exempt. So I think, you know, we just need a little context. Then you throw on top that people can avoid it completely with trusts and grats and other mechanisms. Just want people to think about that a little bit. Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, you got me so excited when you talk about the money you were giving to your kids that I was wondering if you got room for another one. I could arrange an adoption.
Well, Representative Earhart, we're not. But if we had the kind of resources, we could be giving away $14,000 to 100 people every year.
That.
But and avoid the tax.
My question is, Madam Chair, can someone give me an example of what qualified business property might be that would fit in here? Is it is
Mr.
there
Michael?
Some category or something or other that
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, it's virtually any kind of assets you hold in a trade or business. It has to be a small business, so I think if I recall right, there's a $10 million limit on the annual gross receipts of the business. I mean, I might be wrong about that. I'm doing it from memory. But so it could be a building, you know, where you're conducting your business. It could be vehicles. It could be machinery, equipment. It could be inventory. It could be accounts receivable. It's anything that a business owns that's used in the trader business.
Representative Earhart.
I think that takes, Madam Chair, a lot of wind out of some of the sales that have been going on. That's your wind in the sales, not the sales of property.
Well, thank you. I do think, you know, we still have a lot of people opposed to the gift tax and the estate tax. I understand that, but I just want people to really know what it is as before we make changes. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Earhart in these previous comments, I know we've gone through a lot of ways that people can use very elaborate and complicated ways to avoid this new gift tax in Minnesota, but I think the committee is overlooking a very simple and easy way to not have to pay this tax, and that is you move out of the state of Minnesota. You leave the state of Minnesota, and recently the Minnesota CPA organization did a survey of their clients, and they found that 86% of their high-wealth individuals are researching or have asked for advice on leaving the state of Minnesota. So I think an important context of this conversation is to understand that these surcharges, these taxes, you're right, they're on an incredibly narrow band of individuals who have a lot of money. They're also a group of individuals who know how to move. They know they have the flexibility to spend 1 month or two more months out of our state and become residents of a different state and not have to use these schemes, Representative Earhart, to avoid these incredibly insane surcharges. So that's just something that the committee, I hope that the committee would consider, is that when you're an outlier, when you have a tax that only two states offer that 48 states in the District of Columbia don't have, you are an outlier. You got a goofy tax policy in place that was implemented last year.
Well, and Representative Earhart, I know you want to respond. I'm responsible for that, though, so I would like to respond to that as the person who carried the gift tax. And I hear you, Representative Garofalo, because, you know, some people are very tax-averse and will do about anything to avoid it. And others, it really doesn't have a lot of input in their decisions. And, in fact, the data on whether people move or not relating to an estate and gift tax is mixed at best. So, I'd be happy to provide some of the things I've been reading about that. But, you know, one of the things on the gift tax that is one of the reasons I believe in it is there's an inherent unfairness. And when I've talked to some of the estate tax and, attorneys who are helping people with their trust, and we talk about, you know, if we could unify the gift tax to the estate tax and change the rate structure and get rid of the balloon and do some of these things, do you have a beef? And most will say, you know, I actually don't disagree with you. And it's this. If you are a multimillionaire and I am a multimillionaire and you know you're going to die, you can basically gift away your fortune and avoid the tax, as I also included that in here, as we now learned because of court law, what Carl Polad did, and I would hope you would all read it. But if I am a millionaire and I get hit by a car and die, I don't get that opportunity. So we have gift taxes work to avoid deathbed giving, and it's a very unfair piece of equity in the tax code. And so there might be other ways that people could talk about doing it, but we have people who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, some who can plan to gift away a lot when there's no gift tax. And remember, the federal folks have a gift tax. And then folks who don't get to plan, they don't get that opportunity. So it's just something I think about philosophically. Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I find the interesting use of the word unfair. Only in government would we say that the government's inability to tax an income either a second or third time is somehow fundamentally unfair. What we're talking about is a provision in law exclusive to Minnesota and to a certain degree Connecticut that no one else has. This is a very unusual tax provision that we have in our state law now. And the fact that the CPAs, not Pat Garofalo, not the Republicans, not the legislature, the CPAs are reporting that almost 90% of their customers are looking at ways to try to move out of our state, that's a problem. That's a big problem. And whatever you have the best of intentions for trying to get more money into the state's coffers here, but for the spending purposes you want, but to recognize the fact that we're seeing that level of interest from taxpayers to the people they are paying, that signifies there's a pretty big problem out there, Madam Chair.
I appreciate your thoughts on this. I hope you appreciate mine. I will provide you with the studies that show most people are not actually considering moving related to these taxes. But I do want to tell you something I heard you say that I would ask Mr. Michael to respond and just educate us, because I don't know the answer on this. But people have said, these are people are paying taxes again on something they already paid taxes on. And I don't think that's accurate. I think much of the state has never been taxed. In fact, if we all, set up a deferred compensation piece of our savings, you don't pay the tax on, you pay it when you take it out. So I've heard in testimony in the Senate that these people are getting taxed twice, and a lot of that is not accurate, depending on how you got to have that wealth. You may have never paid tax on it. So if Mr. Michael can just tell us about, if you're wealthy, does that mean you've paid taxes on everything once and now an estate tax or a gift tax serves to make you pay tax on it again? Because I don't think that's accurate.
Madam Chair, are you suggesting the state of Minnesota should begin taxing deferred compensation?
Of course not. I thought maybe I misunderstood you, but I thought you said it was people paying taxes on it again.
But just to be clear, the new proposal from the DFL is not going to be to tax deferred compensation now, because we had some provisions come out of the sky at the end of last session. We don't need to worry about that this year.
Well, I know you're kidding. So,
no, actually, I'm not, but that's okay.
And Representative Garofalo, we didn't have any come out of the sky. Everything that passed was either in the House or Senate tax bill as they left their respective bodies, well, every provision.
I think those in the warehousing industry, those in the telecommunications industry, and the farmers who are paying the farm equipment repair tax, their assessment was that they were not going to be hit by those taxes, and they feel like it fell out of the sky. That's subject to interpretation, though.
That is interpretation, because it was in the Senate tax bill from the first day they voted out of the Senate. So I understand that people maybe weren't aware that it was in the Senate tax bill, but that doesn't change the fundamental fact that it was.
Not in the House.
So, not in the House, no. Mr. Michael, can you talk about, and it isn't just this discussion, but we have heard people say, I have heard people say in both bodies that this is taxing people multiple times on income they've earned if you have these mechanisms in law. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's one of the, that general point is addressed in the department's study, which is, I believe, in your packets. And obviously the legal answer is, well, it's a separate tax, just like sales taxes are different than income taxes, and so there's not double taxation. But one of the rationales for the estate tax is that it functions as a backup to the income tax, because the income tax does not tax capital gains until they're actually realized. So in other words, if you buy a share of stock for a dollar and it goes to 100, you don't pay tax on the $99 until you decide to sell it. If you hold that stock and then die and give it to your daughter, your daughter's basis in that stock is then $100. And so the $99 of unrealized capital gains does not get taxed under the income tax. And so the estate tax, there have been some studies of, well, how much of the estate values constitute these unrealized capital gains that have not been taxed because of the step-up in basis. And if you look at the department's report on page 37, they cite a study by a couple of economists, Poturba and Weisbrenner, MIT economists, that found that 37% of all estate values on estates of $500,000 or more is due to these unrealized capital gains. When you go to larger estates of $5 million or more, then over half of the value was this unrealized capital gain. So, there's some truth. The other 44%, for example, that income has presumably been subject to tax under the income tax, but over half of it was not. So, but then the report obviously goes on and says, well, the people who make this argument fundamentally disagree with the idea that investment income should be taxed. And if that's, your sort of point of view, which there's a lot of people that believe consumption taxation is the appropriate tax base, then that's the reason for that argument. But that this one study is the only one that I'm really aware of that sort of focuses on that issue.
Okay, Representative Earhart, Pepin, and Davids, and then Mr. Michael's going to walk through the differences in all the bills briefly. So we will move them all, Representative Albright and others, to get them all before us so they will be heard and be considered for the omnibus tax bill. But I think hopefully people are finding this valuable. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just going to comment on Representative Garofalo's comments about the CPAs. A few months ago, I went to a continuing legal education seminar that you're required to go to after you have the honor of going to law school. And it was very interesting because it was mostly a room full of, maybe 100 to 200 lawyers, mostly practicing in tax law and estate and trusts. And there was a panel of lawyers who practice in that area, and they walked through and they gave some of their advice. And one of the expert panelists said the advice that she gives her clients in that after last year's laws passed that that the lawyers in the room should be giving their clients is to not die in Minnesota. And I think that's very telling when you have a whole room full of lawyers who are, that's their perception of what happened. And you know, it pretty lines up pretty well with what Representative Garofalo just said that the CPAs are advising.
Thank you. Representative Earhart, apologize.
I'm passing this time. I assume, Madam Chair, that we're going to get to talk about our individual.
We are. Representative Liebling, Davney, Davids. I have two lists of people, so I'm sorry I'm confusing people. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to add too much to this except to say when I hear people talking about why people leave Minnesota and move away, I just wanted to mention, although it's just a bit off topic, I just got an email, somebody in my area is leaving because they can't get medical marijuana for their child. So they're saying we have to leave because we can't get the care we need, which also want to respond to the comment about don't die in Minnesota, but you probably want to be here for your health care. Maybe you don't want to die, but a lot of people come here and stay here for their health care, and the health care that they're able to get in Minnesota is kind of a result of the resources that we put into it and the way we manage our health care here as opposed to a lot of other states. So there are lots of things people have to consider other than just the almighty dollar.
Thank you. Representative Davney, then Davids.
I can pass, Madam Chair. Mr. Michael made the point far better than I could.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as far as the Representative Garofalo's comments, I mean, tax twice. Some things are, some things are not. But when it comes to deferred compensation, those would be taxed twice because upon death, it would all be taxable income. There'd be an income tax paid on that money, and then that also go into the estate for the estate tax too. So there's no stepped up basis. And when you pass away with an IRA, there's things you can do with spousal IRA rollovers and some different things you can do there. But that would be one example where you do get hit twice on deferred comp or IRAs.
Thank you. And I was just looking up in the estate tax study, members, just so you know, the study says 1,141 Minnesotans paid the Minnesota estate tax. Just wanting people to know what we're talking about, 1,100 people. Mr. Michael, can you walk through the chart that's been passed out? It also has the price tags on the bills, so we can all kind of see what they are. And then we're going to ask the authors to come to the table and talk to us about them. So, Mr. Michael, I think it's just helpful to talk about them as a group. If everyone can find this handout. Thank you, Ms. Starr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this table attempts to compare the different features of the tax bills or the estate and gift tax bills that are before the committee. So the second column, which lists gift tax, you can look down and see whether it's either repealing the gift tax or whether the bill is repealing the gift tax or increasing the exemption amount. On the estate tax exemption, you can see whether the bill is increasing the exemption amount. Then on the estate tax rates column, you can see whether it's essentially imposing its own rate schedule and eliminating the bubble, as Ms. Starr was talking about, which there are two bills that do that, or if it's not changing it. The next one on taxable gifts included in the estate, there are a number of these bills that eliminate that three-year look back, and you can see whether that's being done or if there are other changes that are made. And then the final column indicates the cost of the reduction in revenue that results from the bill.
Okay, thank you. We're going to ask Representative Albright to join us at the table now. First member to get a bill in on this subject. If you look at their, we put them in order they were introduced. So it's Albright, Drazkowski, Representative Sayre Anderson, and then we'll just keep going. And I think we'll just take testimony on all of them. I think most people here want to talk about most of them, and they like some and not others, and we understand that. So Representative Albright, thanks for sitting through the discussion, and Could someone move Representative Albright's bill?
So move, Madam Chair.
So Representative Zellers moves House Bill 1887 to be before the committee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't reiterate a lot of what Ms. Starr said. There are a couple of additional points that I would like to point out in terms of the gift tax and the estate tax that was enacted into law back in the last session. One of them has to do with the gift tax as it would apply to transfers of real estate, tangible personal property, or business interests located outside of Minnesota by a Minnesota resident. In this case, federal gift taxes would apply, and they would be a subject to Minnesota gift taxes as well. And so I think that's pertinent to the conversation that we're having today as well. With regard to Minnesota estate taxes, they will now be calculated by including all gifts made within the last 3 years of a decedent's date of death. So to your point, Chair Lincheski, about the bedside bequests, the clawback of the last 3 years would nullify that point that you made earlier. This provision is retroactive. Additionally, which is somewhat poignant, for deaths occurring after December 31st of 2012. So we have to take that in. And in my workaday, in my career path, I deal with financial folks on their estate planning and whatnot. And so one of the things that has been most motivating for me is folks that are, as to the point that's been made earlier, about owning property or removing that property from Minnesota tax rolls. Under current law, a non-resident's estate that owns real estate or tangible personal property located in Minnesota is subject to Minnesota estate tax. The new legislation takes one step further by including Minnesota property held in a pass-through entity such as an S corporation, which a number of small business owners utilize for tax purposes, partnership, which includes multi-member LLCs, and as has been said, family limited partnerships, and some of the mechanisms such as GRATs or GRUTs, that's also a term that can be used, single-member LLCs or similar entities, or a trust in a non-resident estate. Those are all. In the larger global picture, I might just suggest that this is of a short-term revenue generation, per se, for the state. But if we take a look at the inhibiting nature of the estate and the gift tax structure, as it would pertain to business succession planning, as it would pertain to revenue generation going forward longer term than the very minor number of estates that are applicable to both the estate and the gift tax, I think we're losing sight of the job growth that is really our task, and how this actually inhibits some of that because of the worry of clarity that a business owner has for how are they going to transfer that to the next generation. So my bill, and I would take exception, and I have a testifier that would like to speak to that. My bill does remove the bubble because we're using conformity with the federal law as well as the marginal tax rates on the federal model. So I'd take exception with that. But in light of that, I do have two testifiers, Madam Chair, and I don't know if you'd like to hear them now or at the end.
I think if we can, we'd like to just make sure we move everyone's bill and lay them over, and then everyone can testify to all of them. That way, all the bills will get heard. So we will definitely put your people in first place, though, when we get to public testimony. So,
thank you.
Members, we're going to lay over Representative Albright's bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you so much. Representative Drazkowski, any additions from, maybe you want to stay right there, and any other comments on, tell us about your bill.
My bill, I think it's already laid over,
and
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Drazkowski has moved House Bill 1909 before the committee. We'll hear it again.
Okay.
We heard it before in other parts.
This is a double-moving bill, Madam
yes.
Chair. Thank you.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members, this bill is one that I think repealed, as far as I could tell, most, if not all, of the large number of tax increases that affected our agricultural and rural residents, especially our farmers throughout Minnesota. And so a share of those were covered in the bill that we passed off the floor last week, the business-to-business taxes. I also included in the bill the repeal of the gift tax. And and I've had the discussion last time, Madam Chair, and will again, that This tax and the estate tax have large implications for our rural communities, especially our farm families. And I've got a farm family here, the Graydon family from Altura. We'll get up and talk later after we get through all the bills and talk about their experiences. But these farms in Minnesota reach those thresholds of $5 million and $10 million in value quite quickly, especially the grain farms out west. But, you know, the average size farm down in my neck of the woods in southeastern Minnesota, I don't know what the average number of acres is, but I just punched the numbers up right now, and a 500-acre farm is at $7,000 in land value. It's $3.5 million, members. And a lot of farms are larger than 500 acres, some of them up to 1,000 acres or more in our part of the state. And you get into southwestern and northwestern Minnesota, those farms would be larger than that, and I expect you're going to see those same impacts. So my concern is, of course, when these farm families attempt to transfer their farms, and end up, maybe they didn't start their estate planning process early enough. These are families who are working hard on running their business, which is very labor intensive. And I listened with interest to the discussion. And this, of course, I said to Representative Davis, this is a very complicated area when you start looking at all the interactions and trying to wrap our heads around this. And I can only think of our small businesses throughout Minnesota, especially our farms, who are enthralled in working, keeping their businesses running through the year. And do they have the ability to avoid these taxes to the extent that maybe people with high-powered attorneys and estate planners do? And have we, by putting all these additional taxes in front of these small businesses, are we, is this a job creations bill for the people who are doing estate planning or what? It just seems to be getting members out of whack. These farm families, some of them get caught up and don't have those vehicles put in place completely, get in a position where after the death of the farm operator, end up with the children being in a position where they have to pay off a portion, sometimes significant portions of the farm. They have to sell off those portions of the farm in order just to pay the taxes on them. So that's the concern, Madam Chair and members, and I really appreciate, Madam Chair, you having this hearing about the gift tax and the estate tax, helping us wrap our head around it, and hopefully eliminating this gift tax as we look at, you know, we've got another $700 million of taxes we don't need that we can get rid of and relieve these farm families throughout Minnesota of this burden. So thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. And we're going to lay that bill over once again for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Anderson now moves House Bill 2014. I think this is a reprise as well because you were dealing with other issues. Well, Representative Anderson.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this was part of a larger package that included the B2B. The reason why I've got the gift tax repeal in here as well is Minnesota went in the opposite direction of most states in this last tax bill. You had last time around that Indiana and Tennessee and North Carolina, all three of them had eliminated their gift tax, and yet here in Minnesota we decided to add it in. And so we are only one of two states that have this, Connecticut being the other one, and then Minnesota. And so, you know, in searching and looking at this issue and trying to look at, you know, the impact in other states, what I found is that Minnesota made the list of, as Representative Pepin pointed out, we are on Forbes' list of where not to die, which is not a good PR pitch for our state when people Google Minnesota and see that we're a place that you just don't want to die. And that obviously impacts many things. It impacts the fact that we do want people to stay here in their retirement age, because as people enter that phase of their life, they tend to do a lot of giving with our, whether it's our school districts, whether it's our communities, and also giving a monetary value, but also time, too. And so we're losing out on a huge part of our population that are significant to the well-being of our state. So that's why I think this provision is very important to have, and that we make this as part of the unsession and fix it. So that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you so much. Representative Earhart, you want to move your, Representative Earhart now moves House File 2182.
That's similar to others, Madam Chair, but I think I just want to add a couple of things here. I think this is the one that has attracted the people's running to their tax planners and suggesting that maybe they should move out of the state. I think this gift tax has. And it's probably if they have some of the things explained to them like we have here, they might change their mind and they might not, because I don't think some of them are even bothering to listen. But I have a district, and I'm sorry I couldn't find this. My district has the greatest number of high-income people. Now, I know there are some other places in the state, Rochester and so forth, but they're sliced up into a couple of districts. So I got this from the Revenue Department, and I'm going to look for it again. But contrary to everyone leaving here and you don't want to die here, I have found, in fact, I went to a gathering at St. Patrick's Church, big gathering, several hundred people, social justice thing. I'm not Catholic, but I was there. And there were several couples that said, well, we haven't seen you for a long time, Ron. Well, where have you been? We've been in Florida. Well, why are you here now? We're moving back. We're moving back to die here, where our family is. So it goes both ways, I think, on this, and for the health care. I hate to say that to you, but that's what's happening also. My district is older, and they get closer to death in my district than they do in yours. So,
well, Madam Chair, I'm confused. Representative Earhart, are you advocating for your bill or against your bill?
Representative Earhart.
I think, as a matter of fact, the gift tax should go. That's why I put the bill in.
Thank you. And we're going to lay over that one for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Now we have, and you can see these are tax committee members mostly, but we know you're here, Representative Seltzer and Representative Torkelson, and you're coming up in just a minute. Representative Loon now moves House File 2297 for possible inclusion. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I mean, we've had a pretty good discussion about this, which is a complicated area of tax policy. Just to point out, you know, slight difference in mine, it repeals the gift tax back to the date in which, back to June 30th of 2013. I also propose conforming to the federal level of deduction for the estate tax, and I think it was a good discussion with information from the department about the complexity of this and bubble rates and that. Again, just to point out, while this may not be a lot of taxpayers affected, I think you mentioned something like 1,100, 1,200 people in that, in the larger discussion about our economy and our state and our tax policies and that, you know, I think the value of keeping families that may have means but have businesses in that in the state passing from one generation to the next is a very valuable thing for our state, not only for our economy, but just from a lot of other things we value in Minnesota. We're very happy to talk about businesses that were started here and stay here, and that's something that we want to encourage. And looking at our tax policy and whether or not it does that is an appropriate discussion, and I appreciate that. I think all members here do. The other thing is that, you know, the value of that money and what's going to be done with it, I think, is also part of this discussion. You know, and there was the unfair, or the fair word was talked about, and how much we collect in taxes and what's done with it is always an appropriate discussion. But, you know, taking fairly vast amounts of sums from an estate, in my mind, that's money that may go into government coffers for a year of spending and that for a good purpose. But there's also good purposes of it being invested in the economy and returning and recouping that investment many times over with increased numbers of people employed, good jobs, very valuable contributions to charities and nonprofit entities through charitable donations and that. So I think it's time that we take a hard look at our estate and gift tax policies. We've got a little money in the budget for a cushion to make some of these changes, and I think they could be very good to building a more solid and more stable and a better tax climate for Minnesota for the future. So, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Luna. We're going to lay that one over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Salzer, welcome to the committee. Could someone move House Bill 2464? Representative Lilly moves House Bill 2464 before the committee. And Representative Salzer, welcome to the committee. I think we've covered most things. Anything you'd like to add? We can see on the graph what you have in your bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And this bill, as does your bill, I believe, Madam Chair, unifies the estate and gifts taxes. My bill unifies it and provides one exemption of $5 million. And this goes a long way to reduce the cost of taxpayer compliance and the Department of Revenue Tax Administration. And this $5 million is meant to send a strong message to people planning for their futures, and the message is that we want them to stay in Minnesota and keep their assets here. So thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you so much, Representative Salzer, and thank you for sitting through all the information, and we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Atkins has asked that he does not need his bill heard, and we are now, I would ask for a motion for Representative Torkelson. In his bill is House File, Representative Davids moves House File 2596 before the committee. Thank you, Representative Torkelson, for listening from your office as you attended to other meetings, and we're glad you're back in the room.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to be here in front of the Tax Committee. I believe it's my first time in front of the Tax Committee, and I apologize for not bringing any treats today, but I just was too busy to find it.
Next bill, Madam
Chair. As a farmer, I share many of the concerns that have already been offered today. I just would offer one other perspective. I also serve on the East Slade All Lutheran Church Cemetery Board. And I just want to assure people that even if they die outside of Minnesota, they can be buried back in Minnesota, and we'd be happy to welcome into hallowed ground.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And really, thank you for your bill. And members can see the work in your bill lines up with a few we've heard the same. Thank so thank you so much. And thank we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. We're going to go to public testimony on all the bills. I have five people, and I normally don't ask people to pre-sign up, but I want to start with the people who did, and they are Tony Cornder, if you're still here. And then we have Mike Hickey. If you're here, please join us at the table. Tony Cornder. Oh, that's right, Representative Albright. You had some people there first. Yes, whoever they are, please bring them up. We'll hear from them first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Scott Nelson.
Okay, great.
Who is an attorney with Helmuth Johnson. Scott and I have known each other for some time, and I think that he can speak quite eloquently to a number of the issues that have been raised by both staff and by the committee members, and hopefully bring some clarity to some of the issues at hand and maybe some of the misconceptions that have been raised as well.
Yes, and my sincere apologies. I said we would go to your first, so I apologize.
Thank you, I
appreciate you joining us in the committee here today. So welcome to the committee. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm going to try to truncate my comments that I had prepared because you've covered a lot of it in the preliminary comments that have already been heard, but I just wanted to emphasize a few things, and I also have a co-testifier here who can speak as a constituent and explain how this really applies on the ground level. As Representative Albright mentioned, I'm an attorney. I'm also a CPA, so many of you have seen me over here on behalf of the CPA Society as well as the Bar Association going back about 27 years. But in any case, I just wanted to comment briefly on Representative Albright's bill, which really is mostly about conformity to federal law, and I want to remind members of the committee about some of the advantages of conformity on a very general level. I know many of you have heard that many times too, but again, just to get away a little bit from some of the problems that we have with the existing gift and estate tax law, which again I think have been described fairly well. There's a lot of disjointed provisions in our statutes right now, you know, as has been described. We have definitions, for example, that are different in the income tax law than they are in the gift tax law or the estate tax law. We have a lot of mismatch between the state law and the federal law, so there is a lot of confusion. There's a lot of unintended consequences for people if they don't do the planning and really carefully look at the law in advance. But I wanted to, again, kind of step back and just remind us that, you know, conformity in many cases is good tax policy as well as good public policy. It provides some stability and continuity for taxpayers and for our residents and businesses that are located in Minnesota. It's obviously easier to understand and comply with. As you know, our tax returns for Minnesota have progressively been more complicated over the last 25 years because of the fact that we continue to vary further away from what the federal laws are in many instances. It also, from the Minnesota Department of Revenue's perspective, which of course I'm not representing directly, but I know just from being on the other side working with them that of course this conformity would also reduce their administrative burden and also reduce the enforcement side that they need to emphasize because of the disconnect between the federal and the state law. Of course, there's just a lot of unsuspecting people out there that don't realize, you know, they know the federal law maybe at least at some level, but they don't understand that there's a disconnect at the state level. And of course, we run into that all the time with non-residents who have property here that is now subject to Minnesota tax. They don't understand how our state law works. I think what's been touched on, you know, you talked about GRATs earlier and some of the sophisticated planning that people like me do advise our clients on a regular basis, and it is good business for me. I do have to admit that. But the whole point is that for constituents in the state of Minnesota, you could reduce the costs and the planning and all of the things that they need to do by making the law more easy to comply with as well as more easier to understand. And again, I think that's a lot of, you know, where I'm coming from with my testimony right now on the conformity. We've talked a little bit about the fact that the farm and small business exclusion does not apply to lifetime gifting. And this is a very important and critical point because, of course, a lot of us work with our clients on business succession planning. You want to do that during lifetime. You don't want to have to wait until you die to do your succession plan. And the way the law is set up right now, again, you know, the gift law doesn't allow you to do that, at least, and still get the exemption. So, you know, that's a big disconnect. Again, my co-testifier here will tell you on the ground level how that really impacts the taxpayers who are dealing with that issue. The only thing I wanted to finish up with quickly on my side is you know, all of the problems that we have with the existing law. And again, it sounds like hopefully at a minimum this committee will be looking at maybe trying to integrate the gift and estate tax systems and, like you say, maybe tie in better to the federal law so that we have more conformity in all these different areas of the tax law. Okay. That's the end of my
great. Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Remarks at this point.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, my name is Tony Corner. I'm an eighth generation farmer, tracing all the way back to early 1800s Germany. But I farm with my dad in St. Lawrence and Belle Plaine Township in Scott County. We have been dealing with some estate planning and estate transfer issues for several different levels. There's a saying in farm estate planning, when you're trying to pass a farm to a son or daughter, that can be difficult. It's more difficult if you have siblings that don't farm. My dad was one of four children. He's the only one that is continuing to farm. I am one of four siblings. I'm the only one continuing to farm. That makes it more difficult. There's a saying that our estate guy says is equal isn't fair. And the only one that is continuing to farm. I am one of four siblings. I'm the only one continuing to farm. That makes it more difficult. There's a saying that our estate guy says is equal isn't fair and fair isn't equal. I think that applies more. That applies everywhere, but it's very common in farm planning. I think one of the representatives made a good point that farmers we're working pretty hard. God bless our dairy farmers who do 365, 24/7. Luckily, I get a little bit of time in the winter, but we're still busy. What we're short on is time, and we're short on money, and to have have to hire somebody to keep up on this ever-changing estate planning, different rules, different levels. In the last couple of years, we've had a really good farm economy. Land prices went up. We've had some millionaires made overnight. My grandfather would have been, his farm would have made him a millionaire, but he didn't have enough cash on hand to go buy a new pickup, even at 1990s prices. You made a point about gifting, about handing out, you can hand out so much money. Well, when your savings account is dirt, that doesn't translate. And some of these people don't realize that you're in a position where you're going to get hit with this estate tax. And all of a sudden, it's a surprise. Not only did a tragedy occur where someone passed away, maybe untimely, farming's a very dangerous occupation, still ranks up there with construction as it's pretty dangerous. If you don't have your ducks in order, it's over. It's done. We have to deal with Mother Nature. We have to deal with markets, and we have to deal with government. And the government's the one thing that I think we could have a little bit of control on, because technically you work for us. One of the main obstacles is getting that farm passed down, continuing the farm to go.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Corner, and thank you for taking the time to be with us. I'm going to ask the Graydons to join us if they are here. And then after that, Mr. Brent Moan and Bill Horn. We are going to get kicked out of this room soon, and so we're unfortunately running short of time. And while we're changing chairs, I'm going to move my own bill, which is described in the spreadsheet, and I'm going to lay it over for possible inclusion. I've just been told I forgot to move my own bill, so we've covered it, though. So if we can just spend a quick minute or two here with the Graydons, and then we have three more testifiers, which we're going to try to finish up here. Representative Draskowski.
Madam Chair, Larry Graydon, him and his family farm at Altura.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'd like to introduce my wife, Nancy, and two of our 14 grandchildren.
Oh, thank you for being here. Appreciate that. Thank you. Mr. Graydon, please.
Mr. Larry Graydon is my name. I've farmed in Winona County all my life. My great-grandfather settled there. We have a couple stories to share. One is Nance and I were at the Farm Bureau annual meeting in San Antonio, Texas in February. I went to a side conference about transition. We're trying to transition. The previous speaker talked about one son or one person wanting to take over the farm. We have four children, and we have two wanted to take over the farm. That even makes it more difficult and more complicated, but I consider it a good problem. When we were in San Antonio, the transition meeting included a speaker by the name of Christopher Hess, a CPA from Clifton, Larson, and Allen here in the Twin Cities area. He explained a lot of good things. When he was finished, I rose and he had questions, and I said my questions, and he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Minnesota." And he said, "Oh my." He said, "Most of what I just told everybody does not apply in Minnesota." So that alerted me, and I've been talking to attorneys and spending not thousands but tens of thousands in transition fees to attorneys and accountants to try and see how we can avoid the taxes that you people have. Evidently there's 1,000 people last year that didn't avoid them, but the point my attorney said, and I told him I was going to speak here today, he said, tell them to align it with the federal if possible, simplify it, and tell them that if the rich, the affluent, that and obviously the previous speaker talked about, we have a large family and we've grown to 2,000 acres. You take that times 7 and see where that's going to come out on your tax code. But anyway, he said, if you can't figure out how to, or tell the committee that you're either going to, we'll figure out how to get around it, or people will leave the state, and either way, the state of Minnesota tax coffers are going to lose. We're not going anyplace. We appreciate you folks. We want you to continue to work to help solve these problems and tweak it, fix it, and that's our goal. We don't want to move. We live here. We want to die here. And, well, we don't ever want to die, but I just as soon keep milking as long as I can. I milked this morning, and I'll be milking tomorrow morning. But thank you for your time, Madam Chair. And if anybody would have a question, I'd be happy to answer.
Madam Chair.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Representative David.
To the witness, who's milking tonight?
My son.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you for making the time to be with us. Mr. Brent Moan and Bill Horn, are either one of you here and want to join us quickly? If not, we understand. You maybe feel that it's been covered. And we are actually over committee time, so we're going to ask people to hurry down if they want to say anything, because we're going to have to adjourn for the next committee. Welcome to the committee.
Oh, thank you. My name is Bill Horn. I'm a CPA by profession. I'm a tax partner with McLadry, a national public accounting firm.
Great.
I spent a significant amount of my time working with in the state and gift planning area, particularly with successful families. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee on this matter. I would like to address what I see in my practice as the impact of the Minnesota state tax changes and the gift tax enacted last year. I'm testifying in favor of Bill, the House File 2297. First, I'd like to comment on the impact of the Minnesota estate and gift tax on wealth flight, the successful people leaving the state. I'm here to testify that the wealth flight is for real. Since these tax increases last year, the fourth income tax tier of the Minnesota gift tax and the changes of the estate tax, last year, I have had more people approach me last summer about changing residency than I had in my 37 years of practice. And these inquiries are not casual. They're very serious. You know, the top marginal tax rate for individual income tax rate for individuals in Minnesota is now over 50%. Think about that. That incremental dollar, half, more than half, goes to the government, and the taxpayer keeps less than half. When you couple this with the state and the gift tax provisions, this is really becoming the tipping point in many eyes, in the eyes of many successful Minnesotans. The wealth flight is not necessarily the actively employed, but these are, it's primarily those people that are near retirement or in retirement. These are people that are not tied to Minnesota by having kids in school or from employment. And but most likely, they also already have seasonal homes, and so the change of residency is not that cumbersome. And who are these people that are considering residency change? These are people that have been long-term Minnesota residents. Their wealth has been earned from hard work, dedicated work, delaying instant gratification, you know, in other words, just saving their money. They do this because they're typical Minnesotans. They're self-reliant people who care about their families and they care about their communities. Their success is not to spend their wealth in retirement, but to provide for their families and quite often charities. And we have to think, what is the cost of losing these type of people from Minnesota? These are the successful people, the families that often are the ones that are providing substantial support for local charities. They support the Guthrie, the Orchestra Hall. They're the ones that buy the box suites at the Twins, the Wilds, the Vikings. When these people leave, we lose a valuable community resource. When they leave, the state loses not only the targeted estate and gift taxes we're discussing now, but also that income tax base. The state tried to stopgap this drain by with this tax of non-residents through the look-through provisions of partnerships and closely held entities. But people won't just sit and let them be taxed. They're not going to tax. We all tend to work and operate in self-interest at times. I'll tell you a story. A family, all non-residents of Minnesota, but they have ties from many years in Minnesota, but they're all non-residents. And they had a family partnership that held a substantial amount of valuable art, millions and millions of dollars of art. Many of these pieces were kept in a private collection here in Minnesota. That they invited many people to enjoy that, valued at tens of millions of dollars. When this law was passed last spring, all this art was moved immediately out of the state by October 3 semi-trailers full of this art. Is this a big deal? Yes. I mean, most of this art would have likely ended up at some art institute here in the state. They would have left it there. No more. It's gone. The state will not get any tax dollars from this. They lost the opportunity to benefit currently in the future from some wonderful pieces of art. A final comment on a wealth flight. I mentioned earlier, a lot of successful families include charity in their estate plans, and most charity is local. So when these families leave, their charitable gifts also leave. And I would surmise that this cost is significant to our communities. So how can we battle wealth flight? From an estate and gift tax perspective, pass House File 2297, adopting the federal tax exclusions, including portability, and repeal the Minnesota gift tax. The Minnesota, as we know, the Minnesota state exemption is currently $1 million, and it really doesn't, our estate tax often doesn't just hit the wealthy, the federal wealthy, which are those with over $10 million, because these are the people that really can hire the professionals to manage their liabilities, they can move, they can do a lot of planning. But the Minnesota estate tax hits those tweener wealthy, the difference between the million and $10 million. And you can see it in the tax incident study of the 1,141 that were identified earlier in the dialogue. 36 were the federal wealthy, and the balance of the over 1,100 were under the federal exemption. That was in 2012. So the question is the federal government excluding these people from tax, but Minnesota seems to tax them? I ask the question, why? A broader federal tax exemption will also help save a very precious resource in Minnesota, which is often overlooked. It's family-owned businesses. Many of you are likely from outstate Minnesota. Think about the larger employers in your town besides government. Often these are going to be family-owned businesses contributing jobs and supporting many local needs. One day, someone's going to die. And on that day, that business will change. It is now going to be encumbered with a debt, a minimum 10% to Minnesota, possibly a 40% to federal. That company, on that day, the only thing that happened was a person died, and that company will have a difficult time surviving. We just heard testimony about the possibility of having to sell farmland to keep the family business going. This is for real. But think about this, is that because of this event, these large employers, we're taxing larger employers, dominant employers in outstate Minnesota, which have many jobs. We're trying to, if you think about it, these are jobs that we want to keep, and all of a sudden our structure is actually impeding those to succeed because of a death. Now, granted, we talked about the small business exclusion that's available. That doesn't go far enough. Adopting the federal exemptions will move this ball further. If you really want to be very bold in Minnesota, is you should exclude family-owned businesses from estate tax, period. Think about it. Why tax a business that employs people? When they monetize it, tax them when they sell it or whatever. But if they're staying and hiring people, exclude it from taxation, period. My last comment on repealing the estate tax, I do want to, I'm a practicing practitioner, that's a redundancy. That I want to make this gift tax is now on the boards. We're filing a Minnesota gift tax returns for 2013. I'm going to report that I believe that the Minnesota Department of Revenue has failed miserably in trying to implement this gift tax law. It just doesn't work. Their internet-based only compliance requirement is unworkable for professionals and incomprehensible for taxpayers, period. The requirement that gift tax returns have to be filed through the website just doesn't work. As a professional, I cannot file a tax return on behalf of a client. The client has to file the return. The website says is that I can't even print a return until it's transmitted to the Department of Revenue. So it's a catch-22. you know, I can't prepare the return, I can't file the return, I can't even print it to give it a client to review it and to file it. It just doesn't work. And then the extension process of these gift tax returns this year is burdensome. They make you file a tentative return, and you have to explain away why you're extending the return. Most states just adopt the federal extension and just accept it, and Minnesota Department of Revenue does it. I'll just say that we have 34 days left before April 15th, and the tax returns are due, and the Department of Revenue, we've been contacting them, and it hasn't done anything. They're tweaking but not fixing. And I believe I'm going to act in self-interest and request or ask that the gift tax, Minnesota gift tax, be repealed retroactively. Thank you for allowing me to speak to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. I'm going to ask the only other people that I know of that want to testify, Ms. Madden and Mr. Hickey. We'll start with you tomorrow. Is that okay? We're way over. Is there anyone who is not normally here who was waiting? We don't have anyone else. Ms. Cadoon, maybe you want to speak tomorrow too. Anyone else who didn't get heard? Okay, thank you, members. We're adjourned.